Hello. Today is November 20th, and we're here with a giant business block.
It's all business today.
So Wendell got a coffee. Or is it did you get a tea or a coffee?
It's a tea. It's actually Earl Grey.
Oh, so it gets caffeinated.
And it's hot, which is unusual. Usually I like cold tea.
It's a very southern of you.
Is it?
So, Amazon.
Uh-oh.
I bet you bought that tea at a grocery store.
Yes.
Wow, how astute of you, Ryan.
Well, guess who's getting in the grocery business? Now, I know what you're thinking. Hey, they're already in the grocery business. Amazon bought Whole Foods. But no, that's not enough for them.
Amazon will launch a new grocery store as an alternative to Whole Foods. Amazon has a different vision of what the grocery store can be, and that's really terrifying.
I like to imagine that the other one is going to be called Half Treats.
You know, in like imagining the future, I sort of figured that the whole vehicle of a grocery store like this would be like you give them your Amazon account in order to get in. So it's like Costco or Sam's Club or something like that. And then you have your regular shopping list, but the whole point of that experience is to convince you to buy even more different stuff.
Now, this is not the, like, cameras watch everything you do and you don't check out, like their convenience store. Was it Go? I think they called it Amazon Go.
Yeah.
This is not that. This is a new thing. It's going to be like a regular, you know, normal, everything like you expect grocery store, but with Amazon's twist on it. We're not sure what that's going to be.
It's going to be like, you ever go to Sam's Club when they're kind of busy and they have a bunch of people giving you samples of stuff?
Yeah.
I bought all kinds of stuff that I never would have bought if it wasn't like, oh, wow, this is actually pretty good.
See, I just go there to scam the free food. I don't actually buy it.
Yeah, you could get an entire meal out of
all those little samples.
Yeah, that's going into your data profile. You're not going to get away with that forever. One day the doors just aren't going to open when you walk out because of the facial recognition.
Social credit denied.
Eats too many cheeses.
So Apple released that credit card, and everybody was super excited about it. We talked about Goldman Sachs. Is like, this is the greatest thing ever. Everybody's signing up. It's fantastic. But the way that you were chosen for, you know, being accepted to the card and your credit limit was all done by algorithm, AI. And that is, it's been exposed to having a little bit of a bias.
Dell unveils subscription.
Oh, that's the wrong story.
That is the wrong story.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. All right, forget all that. Dell's released a subscription service.
Dell has unveiled a subscription model to counter Amazon and Microsoft. However, the video on this is about what we were talking about. So,
oh, that's what threw me off. I saw the was there.
So what this is basically like a lot of companies like the fact that they subscribe to hardware. The economics and accounting rules in America are from made-up fantasy land, like full of accounting fraud that allows things like Enron to exist. And so that really interferes with Dell's bottom line because Dell's bottom line is about selling you hardware. Then you've got an asset. Oh, boy, that's taxable. There's also this leasing thing. So this read to me like leasing, but with more steps.
Well, they want to compete with the cloud. So, hey.
Which is not a good deal.
Run your own cloud, but get new hardware every so often. And you always know what your price is. You don't have to be surprised by, you know, it's just a monthly fee. You budget it. Here's what's going to happen. But they have a lot of different tiers. So it's going to be hard to navigate for people who aren't like really intimately familiar with it.
Like a lease, but with more steps.
So who knows? Maybe that'll work. Maybe it won't. You do still have to go through the whole thing of setting it up by yourself.
Yeah.
And that's more cost that's not factored into the monthly fee.
Now the Woz story, which probably should be next.
No, well, that's later. So okay. we'll get to that.
It's fine. Okay.
GitHub. GitHub is one of those companies, and that's Microsoft now. Microsoft bought that. It's one of those companies that's having some activism. People don't like the contracts that they're taking, so they're quitting.
People are more woke than ever. TechCrunch has the headline, GitHub faces more resignations in light of the ICE contract. Now, this contract with Immigrations and Customs is only a $100,000 contract, but people are upset enough about GitHub doing business with ICE that they're quitting.
Which is, I mean, whether you agree with that or not, I mean, that's kind of how it should work, right? Like, if you don't like the business practices of the place you're working for, you quit.
Listen, if we have guaranteed income and people think that they can just do this activism, quit, and then immediately find another job, there's no end of the social change that will come about. We must stop this.
Nah, see, I look at it from a different direction. I think there'll be no limit to the number of candidates to replace her. And no one's going to care. That's one particular woman they mentioned, but I think they said, what, 7 other people followed up? So if you get a big enough run going, maybe. Maybe you can hurt them. But for the most part, I don't see it going anywhere.
It's like that one movie where like the two guards look at each other and they're like, are we the baddies?
Microsoft, perhaps feeling some pressure socially, has made a very surprising announcement about the U.S. GDPR that's come out of California.
Microsoft is vowing to honor California's sweeping privacy laws across the entire U.S. Although I think Microsoft is in a unique position to be able to respond to this, because Microsoft's already a global company, and they've already put controls in place to deal with GDPR. They're just going to turn them on for the entire U.S. now. So these rules make it possible for you as a consumer of Microsoft services or a subscriber to Microsoft services to see exactly what data they have, to download a copy of it, to tell them not to sell it, even though they're still providing you with services, and Microsoft can't penalize you for requesting that you ask them, you know, not to sell your data or anything like that. So this is kind of a win for consumers.
So this computer, we mostly just browse news stories and the ones that we talk about on the news, and somehow The Verge targeted advertising thinks that we need addiction treatment because of that.
Or maybe it's just like by location, it's like, well,
that could be it.
Higher than national average in terms of like, eh.
Speaking of GitHub, they are worried that, you know, hey, our whole world is this code. And what if something terrible were to happen and we were to lose it? That'd be the end of us, right? What can we do to guarantee that it stays here forever? And they have a couple of interesting solutions, one of which is a great headline.
Open source code will survive the apocalypse in an Arctic cave. GitHub is preparing for a different kind of the end of the world.
It's not a dog.
Yeah. So.
It's not a dog.
It's some kind of thing.
Oh, you're talking about
the thing. In the
yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I don't think that there's any alien technology here.
You don't know that.
This is a giant drum of some kind of laser cut film that's supposed to last, was it 200 years?
That doesn't seem long enough.
And they're hoping for 100.
We need to leave something behind that a civilization can do some archaeology on, like, for 100,000 years from now.
Like some kind of pyramid.
And then they have another thing where they cut laser, some kind of glass with laser that's supposed to last an insanely long amount of time.
Oh, yeah, that's the Microsoft thing. They've etched that storage will last tens of thousands of years.
And they put some kind of movie on that. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be that movie and GitHub that's going to be forever stored.
It should somewhere. Be the thing. So that way, like, they watch it and they're like, is this some kind of warning? Like, I don't understand.
And Microsoft. So, again, the story should have been a different order. I didn't think about this. But Stadia launched. And Microsoft has long been working on their own answer to that, which is xCloud.
Their own Me Too.
So I think they made this announcement just to you know, get in front of Google a little bit.
Microsoft has added over 50 games to xCloud Preview and plans for a launch in 2020. The games are mostly 4 versions of Tomb Raider and a couple other things.
Still better than Stadia, though. Yeah, these are just new ones they pointed out. They don't have a list here. But anyway, yeah, this is the thing where the processing will happen out there on Microsoft's cloud, and they will cast it to your local screen, just like Stadia. Although it's not just like Stadia. I don't know if Microsoft is doing the controller with it. I think they might be using the Xbox or something. I don't know. But that's coming. Game subscription services are coming. Not to be confused with the Xbox subscription service that everybody signed up for to get Outer Worlds. That's a different thing. Killing us with choice here. And speaking of choice, how many of you, admit to it if you did it in the comments, signed up for the Evil Empire?
I've resisted so far. Axios says that more than 10 million have signed up for the Disney Plus in the first day. And if you look at the ratings, it's mostly 5-star and 1-star, owing to a large amount of technical problems with Disney handling that many signups in such a short amount of time. Of course, Disney was very quick to do some chest thumping here to say, oh, look, 10 million subs immediately. We're coming for you, Netflix.
Yeah, I think they estimated 100 million to become wildly profitable. Getting 10 on the first day is a pretty good thing to do. And like you say, it was a nightmare, but probably just because of the volume. Yeah. Like, everybody wanted to get in, and they wanted to watch that exclusive content immediately.
People in my hometown were losing their minds. Like, Facebook statuses all week were just like, does anyone got a Disney Plus account I can borrow? Anyone got one?
Well, they're not going to tolerate
password sharing. I'll let you get on my Netflix account.
Password sharing is not going to be allowed. Well, Disney Plus. They've already talked about that.
Well, the people on my Facebook did not know that.
What do you think about this logo?
It's boring, but exactly what I would expect from Disney for something like this. I don't understand why the plus is slightly wavy. I guess to continue the line of the star shooting, but
yeah, I guess to keep the curve. I don't know. That's a question.
It's fine.
We should contact Disney PR.
I'm sure Disney PR would really care to give a statement to Level One.
Yeah, Elon Musk has another fantastic week where I'm sure he's gloating about on Twitter.
As we speak.
Because the rockets went back up. We talked about this last week. They were planning this. Everything went perfectly. They keep recycling them. More Starlinks. It's such a great thing.
SpaceX launches another 60 Starlink satellites while setting two rocket reuse records. So, yeah, everything went according to plan. They were able to reuse all the stuff. The thing we were talking about last week with, like, the reusing Sabot, I guess, for launching all these. Yeah, I don't know what to call it. For these satellites, it worked. It worked successfully. And Starlink is going to be great for internet in rural parts of America because it's better than regular satellite because it's not geosynchronous satellites. But still satellite.
And that was the fourth time that rocket had been used.
So if you guys need anybody from SpaceX's launch, is it SpaceX or a Tesla project? I don't know. Anybody from the Starlink group that needs some beta testers, we'll be more than happy to help you beta test in the most rural, impassable, non-populous area.
Why would they want that to diminish their results? They're going to get that data and be like, wow, we're never going to get internet.
Krista has admitted that she goes backpacking just to watch movies on her phone.
Yeah, that's exactly why I do it.
Well, it's also problematic in rural places like eastern Kentucky because it's so mountainous. You have a relatively small slice of the sky. So depending on what the receiving mechanism is, that may be problematic.
Even with the mountains, you get the trees too. It's like there is no sky in eastern Kentucky. It's just trees.
SpaceX, this was a great launch and everything, but there is that little mark on their record where the one blew up in the sky.
I think that happened more than once.
That upset some people. But the good news is they figured it out. They installed a fix. They did it again.
It was an anti-backflow valve. SpaceX successfully tests Crew Dragon launch abort engines, and this article explains what failed on the first one. They figured it out. What change they made to prevent it from happening again, and everything went well. So NASA should clear this for a manned test.
It really is amazing the amount of telemetry and reconstruction that they can do. That they took a rocket that literally blew up, and they said, oh, this one tiny piece, that's what failed. Just put this in here and it'll fix it. This is just in case something goes catastrophically wrong as it's on its way up. This will let the people inside not die a fiery death.
It will fire it can actually land with the abort thrusters. So that would be pretty cool. As opposed to like ejecting and then like parachuting, maybe surviving. It's just like a gentle, that failed.
But Mr. Musk is embroiled, as he is almost always, in a lawsuit. And there's been some very interesting discovery come out of that lawsuit that paints a pretty disturbing picture.
Elon Musk's solar deal has become the top threat to Tesla's future. If you look at the transcripts in this Bloomberg article and the way that Bloomberg paints what happened here, this might be criminal for Mr. Musk because he said some things that were wholly untrue about Solar City. And he had a commercial interest in Solar City and he had a commercial interest in Tesla. And it was like, hey, I can use my status and access in Tesla to solve this Solar City financial problem. When maybe that wasn't the best investment. It turns out investors were right. Solar City was craptacular.
Solar City sounds like some sort of discount bargain bin.
Spatula City.
Yeah.
Selling suns. Stars. So, yeah, they pointed out that a lot of people at Tesla were tentatively like, Lord Musk. Perhaps this is not the best idea, as you are purchasing a company that is almost guaranteed to go bankrupt. And he was like, we will purchase it. And then it went bankrupt. So, yeah, the shareholders, I think, have a pretty good argument here.
Yeah.
And maybe why you shouldn't have one monolithic despot running your company. Maybe a committee would be better. Speaking of CEOs that have single-handedly destroyed companies, remember the guy that used to run Uber? Well, the decisions he made in the past continue to haunt them.
Uber has been hit with a $650 million employment tax bill in New Jersey. So New Jersey has ruled that Uber drivers are employees and entitled to workers' comp, and not workers' comp, but unemployment insurance and stuff like that. And Uber's never paid it.
So now they have to.
I wonder if anybody that stopped driving for Uber had filed for unemployment, because that seems like it's not a thing. Like, Uber's not going to fire you. You're just not going to drive for Uber anymore. How would you ever claim the unemployment benefit?
Well, that's their argument. But the world we live in doesn't accept the idea of that kind of employment.
But I mean, like, if you were a driver, like, how do you go about collecting your benefits? Did anybody in the, because this is a multi-year, this goes back several years, did anybody claim that that benefit? Because if they didn't, that seems shady. Seems like maybe this is just a money grab by New Jersey.
Well, a lot of people are clamoring for that change to be made.
It's probably good in the long run. It's good for the workers, but it doesn't make sense for Jersey to collect on money that drivers were never able to collect on when they needed it.
We'll see, I guess, although it will take many, many years, I'm sure, to shake out. AMD has, they've been, they kind of have their boot on the throat of Intel, and they are only continuing to add pressure. Intel doesn't really have much of an answer. The latest is the long-awaited 16-core in the Ryzen series.
The AMD Ryzen 9 3950X review, a 16-core Zen 2 powerhouse. Now, we reviewed it too. We did a video. It's pretty good. It's 16 cores of madness. So if you have a program that will take advantage of 16 cores, it's very fast. But you get most of the benefit on the 3900X, which is $250 cheaper and has all the same cache and things like that. It's 12 cores versus 16 cores, so I still think that 3900X is a better deal, but the 3950X runs at higher clocks and lower voltages overall, so it's kind of an insane CPU. It reaches into X299 territory. So,
Google. We've got a Google block here, and Google may have been sitting there looking at Apple and their success with the Apple Card and saying to themselves, how did we not do that? We rule the world. Why are we not into banking?
The Wall Street Journal says that the next in Google's quest for consumer dominance is banking. Now, this one I couldn't read. The paywall defeated me. I think they blacklisted my IP address.
Well, I found an alternative.
How dare you try to educate yourself?
The interesting thing about this, yeah, it's going to use the Google Pay. Like, you're going to have full integration with that. But otherwise, it's a very traditional kind of banking.
Hmm.
Like, everything about it is not, you know, how the Apple Card was kind of like, oh, you're only going to do this with it, you're only going to do it. No, the Google banking is very old school. It's just by Google.
I'm kind of surprised that Google hasn't bought Visa, because we know that Google has agreements with Visa, MasterCard, and Amex for purchase data, because they're able to reconcile things. And we know that Google mines the crap out of your Gmail to know that when you bought things. So
I'm pretty sure that's in the how not to get hit with an antitrust newsletter every week. Like, remember, don't acquire something like Visa or the government will destroy us. Keep that in mind.
But it's okay if we become an independent merchant bank. That's completely fine.
Chrome. Modern browsers are somewhat infuriating because it's obvious that they want speed among all other things. And I think the thing that they're terrified of is users who don't know what's going on just being like, oh, this is slow. It must be Chrome. Let me switch to another browser. And that's why you can't really ever defeat the cache. It's really, really annoying. But I think this is another step to say, hey, it ain't the browser, bro. Don't blame us. Remember, it's not our fault.
Google Chrome to identify and label slow websites. It's going to put a little icon next to them to be like, the website you're about to click on, it's kind of slow. It's got a lot of tracking scripts, marketing scripts. They can't seem to slim it down. So, just FYI.
Oh, I can't wait for the apocalypse.
the next adpocalypse?
Yeah, that's going to cause, yeah.
Seems a little ableist to me. Google, now, you know, we talk about Visa. Like, no, let's not buy Visa because the government will come after us. But you could argue that much worse than going into finance is going into healthcare. And somehow the newsletter has not included the, hey, don't get involved in medical records.
Google's Project Nightingale gathers personal health data on millions of Americans.
This is what Florence would have wanted.
The search giant is amassing health records from Ascension facilities in 21 states. Patients not yet informed. Ooh. Ouch.
You ever think she was having that conversation when she was alive? It's like, you think they'll build statues of me? And someone was like, no, they're going to build an AI that turns down insurance in your name.
What's insurance?
I think one thing that the article points out is that the most staunch, like, I've got nothing to hide, I don't care, people who don't care about their privacy, they start to care when their medical records are put on the internet.
So the big phrase, oh, we're paywalled, right?
Gosh.
So the big phrase here, they actually had a graphic, and there was a workflow of how this works. So it's literally an AI. They're not just gathering the records, but an AI is making recommendations about, like, what, how, hey, you should do this. You should put more doctors on this one. You should take doctors off of this one. It's making really big decisions. And then the last part of the workflow was extra billing could be applied. So you're going to be paying for the AI to do this, which is just madness.
That sounds like insurance fraud.
It's a dark timeline.
And no one not cares when it's the insurance company doing it.
You're not going to be able to get away from this. So they pointed out that this is totally legal. Yeah. You can't, like, opt out of it. And it might already be happening. You don't know. There's a certain group of hospitals they're already partnered with. And another thing that Google might have going for it, who knows, but we're going to find out because the Supreme Court has finally agreed to it.
Oracle Google copyright dispute to be decided by the Supreme Court. Oracle must not be allowed to win. The fate of programming APIs and the human race is at stake.
We've already talked about this previously. This is the API thing where Oracle says that APIs themselves should be the subject to copyright rather than the things that they do. And it's a dumb argument. But who on the Supreme Court do you think will understand this? You think Ginsburg could even begin to wrap her little walnut-sized brain around this?
I would love to see her taking, like, a visual basic class or, like, a JavaScript class or something.
So she's, like, 3 inches from the screen. Oh.
I think that would be great. That would be awesome.
It'd be good for entertainment.
Well, it'd probably be good for all of us if they took some tech classes, but they won't.
Yeah, they won't. For sure they won't. Now we got an ad for Alka-Seltzer. What do you think about us, The Verge? And Neutrogena. So Google, this is the Google blog, by the way, if you're thinking, why are we having story after story about Google? They're famous for their transparency in the workplace, right? You get to set up meetings if you want, and they have this famous Friday meeting.
Weekly, yeah.
TGIF, and not everybody gets to go, but it's live streamed to the entire campus. So there's a big group, and they talk about things. You're allowed to submit questions. You're allowed to talk about anything you want. Any kind of question that you have, they'll talk about it. But not anymore.
Google is scaling back its weekly all-hands meetings after leaks. And Sundar Pichai tells staff that, this is not going to happen anymore. The longer explanation here from him was that only 25% of the company even tunes in for the TGIF meetings. And it has become a platform for political dissent and, you know, criticizing what Google is doing rather than business strategy and products. And he's always like, we need to return to a focus on business products and strategy, a.k.a. don't, let's not get everybody all riled up about who's doing what contract for what, or
this. Or what constitutes a sandwich? Is a Pop-Tart a sandwich? Like
the whole Chinese dragonfly thing. Like, let's not, let's just forget about that.
Basically, he said, talk about Google stuff or I'm shutting down the meetings.
He literally did shut down the meetings.
But he did, yeah.
No.
He did it.
It's once a month now. And they're not talking about politics. So that's going to be interesting. This one from Business Insider. This is kind of a Captain Obvious story. I think we all knew this. Well, at least most of us knew this. But it does bear repeating, I guess. And they do point out some details about how it works.
Google reportedly manipulates search results to hide sensitive subjects. And this is to an extent far greater than has been reported elsewhere. So this doesn't surprise anybody. Look at how much, like, even in an obscure backwater YouTube channel like ours, look at how much manipulation goes into, like, the subscriber thing and the comments stuff and, like, who gets a notice. Literally all of that. All of it is a dumpster fire. So, yeah, search engines, which has way more visibility than other Google platforms, of course it's going to be insane.
And they pointed out the autocomplete. The autocomplete is maybe the most glaring example, because anybody can test that and play with it. And if there's anything even the least bit controversial, it just disappears from the autocomplete. And that has nothing to do with how many people are searching. It has to do with what the people at Google feel you should and should not be looking at. So that seems wrong.
It also has commercial implications, which we will talk about in another story.
Now, we mentioned that Microsoft announced 50 more. That's 50 on top of the already announced lineup for its cloud gaming service. That's a pretty decent amount of games for a monthly subscription, right? Well, Google Stadia has actually launched. Microsoft's still spooling up. They might give us more games. So how many games did Google give us? Was it more than 50? No.
Google reveals Stadia launch lineup of 12 games, not including Borderlands 3. No!
12 whole games? What else will I do?
Well, like four of them were Tomb Raider.
That'll keep us
just
busy.
Just like Microsoft.
Keep us busy for days. So here they are. And some of them aren't very exciting.
Assassin's Creed.
Just Dance 2020? Oh, yeah. I've been waiting on that one.
Tomb Raider. Guilt. Kine. Tomb Raider again. Samurai Showdown. Another Tomb Raider. Thumper. And Tomb Raider.
Thumper.
What is Thumper?
It's Thumper the Rabbit, obviously.
I guess.
He gets his own video game title.
Oh, from Bambi, you mean?
No, I actually don't know.
Now, don't worry. Borderlands 3 is coming. And remember, there is a tier of Stadia where you can buy the game and have it forever.
But also revealed from Stadia's launch is a lot of the features are missing.
Yeah.
Like 4K and the ability to play games with your friends in co-op and the ability to save certain things. It's basically most of the features that they talked about that made Stadia something different than other video game platforms aren't there yet.
That's business plan code for it. Let's see how many people actually use this before we bother spending the money to develop those features.
They also have a family plan where you can buy games that you can share among your family subscription. But that's not there yet. So if you were to buy that game now, when the family subscription thing comes around, you'll be buying it again. Which doesn't seem like a very good deal.
Oh, it's a vicious cycle.
I should have just not done that.
This is the Apple block. Originally, the story that I linked to, I can't remember where I linked to it from, was just the most worshipful.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah, I read that. I was real surprised you put it in there.
Well, I didn't read it before I put it in there. But after reading it, I was like, we have to scrap that one. Because
you're just like, well, we should include some stories about Apple, right?
I just want to point out that you scrapped that one in favor of the actual Apple press release.
Which is less, you know, gushing about this stupid MacBook than the one that originally was in there.
Apple introduces a 16-inch MacBook Pro, the world's best pro notebook, ..
Terms and conditions may apply.
So the max spec on this thing, it's a little over $6,000 US, but that's going to get you an 8-core CPU, 64 gigabytes of memory, and 8 terabytes of flash. And also a non-crappy keyboard. Finally.
They got away from the butterfly switches. And everybody, like, if you look at, so all the articles I was looking at to try to figure out which one to replace it with, which they were all paywalled, that was the universal point of praise.
Yeah.
So Apple, in their brilliance, ruined the keyboard, and then got everybody to praise them for fixing it.
That's kind of a pattern with Apple, though. Like, this laptop is chunky. It's heavy.
Thick.
Yeah. But you need it to be to have that kind of horsepower. But finally, the Pro moniker actually makes sense because all the other, like, when it went from MacBook Air to just, like, the MacBook, like, the rose gold, that MacBook is trash. It's just terrible. Unless the main thing that you want is something that's thin and light and gets on Facebook, this you can actually get some work done with.
But other than the, you know, slightly better performance, it's like the old one. The keyboard is really the only thing that changed. And they brought back the escape key, and they changed the directional buttons back to what they were before, and people were just like, oh, it's the greatest thing ever. But it's just fixing.
Yeah.
The previous article, I wish I would have kept the domain to see. It was just some guy's name, I think. But he said it was the best performing notebook money can buy. No.
Well, they did have thermal throttling. So, like, even though the CPU is the same as older models, the thermal solution in those older models was not well designed. And it is legit better in this one, although those Intel CPUs make a lot of heat. Oh, it's also got new Radeon graphics, too, from AMD, so that's cool.
Well, Apple has... if you buy Apple, you might as well buy everything Apple, right? Because that's the only advantage you get. You're going to overpay, but all their devices do work well together. And that's kind of what they want you to be. They want you to be a holistic Apple person. But as time has gone by, they have more and more subscriptions. They have all these different things. And so it makes sense that they should say, you know what? Just get it all at once. You know, they should do the Dell thing.
Yeah.
You should pay $500 a month and just get everything Apple.
You get a constantly. New $6,000 notebook. And Apple plans a mega bundle of music, news, and TV as early as 2020. The company keeps the rights to the bundle, the News Plus service with TV Plus and music. So this could be good for publishers, but this might not be great for publishers. It just depends on how much consumers use the service.
How long until all of the streaming services, somebody puts together a package where you can get all of the streaming services for a lower price, and we're just right back to cable?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that's probably already in the works and it just hasn't been announced yet.
Hulu, Netflix, Disney Plus, and HBO Go price combined is roughly equal to, you know, the average cable TV bill already.
So cut that by $15 and offer it as one big package, and people would go for it.
Probably.
Because they're going to save a little bit of money.
If Apple could do that, that would probably work. But I think Apple wants too much of a cut for it to make sense for Netflix and Disney Plus and the other people.
Yeah, that's the impossible part, is getting everybody to agree to on board with that. But when they start eating away each other's profits, then...
Maybe.
Apple released that credit card. We thought, oh, this is the story I've started with.
This is the
one
you messed with.
Yeah, the Wozniak video that tripped me up. So think back to the things that I said about that.
Apple's sexist credit card investigated by U.S. regulator. I love the BBC because they always cut right to the chase. So the video on the other article has Steve Wozniak talking about this. What happened was he and his wife got the same Apple credit card, and his credit limit was 10 times higher than his wife's. But they don't have separate assets. They have they've been married forever and ever because, you know, it's the Woz, so it's a little bit of a fairy tale existence. And he's not, you know, super wealthy because he gave away a lot of his Apple wealth, but he's still made a good living from traveling. And
he's quite wealthy.
Quite wealthy. He's not Bill Gates wealthy, because he would have been.
And I think he pointed out that his wife had a better credit score than he did.
Yeah.
But his was 10 times higher. And the guy that invented Ruby on Rails had the exact same experience.
Yeah.
With the same set of variables. And they both pointed out, it was like, wow.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Now, Apple admits that an algorithm basically came up with these.
Yeah, and they may have violated the law in New York. Is that still a separate story? We had a story about New York. Is like, oh, wow, this is immediately a violation of New York state law. Thanks.
No, I think it was in this one. And but this points out, you know, people are like, the algorithm is racist. No, probably the data set that went into training it.
Yeah.
Really did show that women were, the women in that data set were bad with money. And so the AI had no choice but to notice that. That is what we pay them to do. They figure those things out.
But you'd think, like, maybe it would notice, like, you know, over X credit score. then raise credit limit by, you know, I don't know. I feel like there's a way around that, but.
No, I think it's still considering all of that. It's just like, you know, with everything else being equal, if gender is F, reduced by a factor of 10.
Seems that's so high.
That's what it sees in the data. I wonder if the data they were looking at were more like high-end accounts in corporate America, which is dominated by men. And then a couple of females, you know, like the sample size was so low that they drug it way down.
I don't know.
I'm sure somebody will attempt to figure all that out. Meanwhile, when it comes to minorities being trampled by Apple, perhaps the most egregious example of that, our most maligned minority in America, is the vapers.
Exclusive. Apple is going to remove the vaping apps from the store. Now, they put a moratorium on new vaping apps a while ago. It's like 2 months ago. And now Apple is going to remove the vaping apps from the store. If you've already installed the apps, you can keep using them, but good luck with that. No one is going to update those apps now. These are apps for things like controlling the thing that you use for vaping, as well as, you know, like games that had something to do with vaping, which I guess was a thing.
Maybe it teaches you how to blow smoke rings or, I don't know, do tricks. Like
cloud tracker.
Apparently some of these vape things are RGB, and you can program the thing through the phone. I don't know.
So you can get even more attention.
Yeah.
Yes.
I saw there is now a political action committee, We Vape, We Vote, because they're tired of, you know, like, people trying to step on the rights as vapers and get rid of all the...
I mean, yeah, like...
Vapers rise up.
A dozen or two people have died from vaping, but how many people have died from tobacco or alcohol use or fireworks?
Yeah, this is one of those situations where it's like the child pornography thing, because vapers are so annoying that nobody wants to fight for them, but they are absolutely getting railroaded here because big tobacco is just manipulating everything behind the scenes. That the vape illnesses are so blown out of proportion, it's astonishing.
It seems to be like Philip Morris is like, no, you can vape as long as we're selling you the vape gear to do the vaping.
Because, well, they're saying like our stuff is safe. You can't buy this outlaw vape.
Yeah.
So we need regulations that say you have to buy our stuff.
Yeah.
That's really transparent, but it's the world we live in. So, I support the vapers.
I wish
they'd stay at home and do it, but...
Vapors rise up.
Motorola is doing everything they can to just get into your brain with that nostalgia pen and just dig out every good memory that you have of the earlier days. And I've also entered into the horror of the folding phone.
Motorola Razr. Yeah, it's the Razr, but it's a folding LCD. And holy crap, the video makes this thing look legit.
It does. It seems like for what it is, it seems to work really well.
Although the price is not going to happen. $1,300 is insane.
It's more than that. It's $1,499.
$1,499.
People will pay for that, though. Because, like, even I remember the original Razr back in my day, and, like, people would pay a stupid amount of money for those because they were kind of like a weird status thing at the time. I don't know that these have reached that cult status, but they might.
So the thing about it is... Yeah, it looks cool. And yeah, that's kind of a convenient form factor. You know, it fits in your pocket. Now, they point out in the folded state, it's the same thickness as the old Razr.
That's not very thick.
Yeah, pretty cool. But in terms of the hardware, this is not an impressive phone.
No.
Not at all. And it's $1,500.
At least the screen is protected in its folded state, which is kind of nice. I think they should have made it thicker if it was going to give you better specs.
Eh, well, we'll see. We'll see how it does. I had one of the old ones. I had one of the old Razrs. It was fine. It didn't blow me away.
Mr. Fancy, did you have the pink one or the black one or silver one?
No, mine was silver.
There were three colors. Pink was like the cool one among the girls. My cousin had a pink one.
I didn't love the keypad on it.
It was very flat.
And back in those days, you know, I was actually doing texting a lot, so.
See how that works.
.org websites. Now, it's always been, I don't know how strictly it was enforced, but you're supposed to only get a .org if you're a nonprofit or, you know, you have some public usefulness with your website. It seems like those days are over.
The .org, the org that doles out .org websites just sold itself to a for-profit company. This comes on the heels of the organization that regulated the .org top-level domain saying, you know what, these caps that we have on what it costs to register and renew domains, let's just throw that out. It can be whatever.
.biz and .info also unlocked as far as what they can cost.
That's not good. So if you've got a .org domain, it's probably going to get a lot more expensive.
Sad. Although if you've registered for like 10 years, maybe you could sell it. That would be wrong, but you could do it. Dark patterns. What are dark patterns? Dark patterns are things on websites that make you think that you need to buy this product, or that maybe they upsell you on a product you don't want, or a newsletter you don't want, or something like that. And they do it in nefarious manners. And it looks like they're everywhere.
Study of over 11,000 online stores finds dark patterns on 1,254 sites. Krista can tell you a lot about dark patterns.
Yeah, a lot of times when we do work with like ad agencies in particular, they really like the dark patterns. They're like, oh, well, you know what? Before we let the person check out, can we have like a step in the form that's like sign up for our newsletter and do this and do that, and like let's word it in such a way that like it's kind of confusing to opt out of the newsletter. It's like, yeah, that's called a dark pattern, and like users don't like that. And there's a lot of users now, they've done studies, are actually starting to catch on to that, and it's kind of backfiring, so you shouldn't do it.
Do you not want to not register for the mailing list?
Yeah, and it's stuff like that. It's like, don't do that.
They pointed out there's a big list here. So I think this is a typo. Sneak into basket?
Basket.
Maybe that should be the...
It was supposed to be basket.
Maybe that should be the title. Yeah, sneak into basket. So here, you know, they're throwing something in. They got, what is care and handling? No one knows, but it's $3. And you got the subscription that they're sneaking in on you here. This one's just like, oh my God, get it now. But of course, you know, like all those late night commercials,
yeah,
they always did that.
Yeah.
Like in the next 30 minutes. There was no 30 minutes. That commercial ran around the clock.
You could call in literally next Tuesday, and they would be like, yep, sounds good.
There was never a time that commercial hadn't run somewhere in the last 30 minutes. Yeah. So more limited time offer. Confirm shaming is nice.
I hate like, these. That's my least favorite.
I guess if you're an asshole, you don't want the discount.
There's a hammock website I get on that's like, no thanks, I don't like hammocks. And it's like, I do like hammocks. I just want to read your article without your BS.
I love hammocks. Making it nearly invisible. This is a bad one. See that a lot.
You can actually get pinged for that with accessibility, and I think we'll see a lot of accessibility lawsuits in the coming year after the success of the Domino's one. So we might not see that one as often, but
this is one you were talking about where this is a, you know, double negative checkbox.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes on and on, but you see these everywhere, and they're bad. So when you see those, get it, you know, prime your mentality to be like, oh,
they're manipulating
me. Trying to screw me.
It is actually surprisingly effective if you use the brand's contact form, and it lets you get in direct contact with the business owner, not the agency, but the people who own the business, and you're like, this sucks, don't do this. Generally, that's very effective at making the people, not like the people in charge of the website, not do that.
That makes my job easier, because then instead of me just being like, here's all these studies and peer-reviewed things, and they're like, well, you know, we don't really want to listen to that. But if their customers complain,
the people that own the business are generally very attuned to upset customers, whereas maybe the frontline people, whoever they may be, are not.
And it might be that someone sold them numbers.
Yeah, it's like, we will get this many signups on your mailing list. Nobody wants that.
Yeah,
but if they're not reading it.
In order to get those numbers, they'll do anything they can, and you know, it might not even be good for the company, ultimately. But it's a dark world. Don't let your children grow up to be web developers.
If there's like a slightly haunted look in our eyes, that's what that was about.
It's like the dog, like they're handing the dog the cupcake and it's getting like nom flashbacks.
Oh,
it's
us. I love that
picture. But one thing about it, you know, it is probably a safe future if you want to go into it, because this is the world we live in now, and servers and big data and cloud, we need them. Everybody has to have them. It's where the world is going. But we really only got two big names that are making chips for these things, right? Not anymore.
Former Apple chip executives found company to take on Intel and AMD, three of Apple's former top semiconductor executives in charge of iPhone chips, have founded a startup to design processors for data centers, aiming to take on current industry leaders Intel and AMD. They've got quite the hill to climb.
But they do have some big names and, you know, a fairly big brain trust to be able to do these, because all of these guys were in the respective divisions with the big companies that were working on this kind of thing. How about this guy? He was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go with the white pants.
Are they white or just like super khaki? I actually can't tell.
They're going to be skin tight. It's like, bro, you got some sick calves. I know.
I do CrossFit.
So, hey, wish them luck, right? If the modern CPU world has taught us anything, it's that competition benefits the consumer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Foreshadowing for next week.
All right. So tomorrow is another bonus Friday. We get AI and robots and security and
nonsense.
Good Lord.
How can I forget nonsense?
Well, this is the best section.
See you Friday.